Fellow Freedom fans, back here, David Allen Carmichael on the Eagle 104.3 FM. What is the standard? What is the threshold? What is the threshold for corporal punishment? Is it something that ought to be protected as a opportunity for parents to exercise corporal punishment without having them and their children put off into the hoosegow and taken off to strangers? Or is it something that should be excluded as an option? And of course, if it's exercised, have the parents or the children taken off to the hoosegow. It says, now here's something. I'm going to read this off a website that came from, this is a Florida website with regard to protection of child services kind of thing. It says, more than a million children are victims of child abuse and neglect each year. And then here's the caveat. According to the State Child Protective Services agencies. Now, there may be more, there may be less. This is according to them. Many victims don't receive help because they're not reported to the system. These abused and neglected children span all ages, races, religions, and socioeconomic backgrounds. Child maltreatment includes actions that result in, now I think this is important. These are pretty serious words. They should have definitions relating to them so that people could judge rightly if they're going to investigate something to see whether it's abusive or just an opportunity for a child protective services to boost their caseload for their pay increase. Child maltreatment includes actions that result in imminent risk of serious harm. When you're refereeing soccer, there's a word serious, if there's serious foul play, it warrants a red card, but there's other words that are used that are not serious. It says if there's serious harm, death, serious or physical or emotional harm, sexual abuse, no doubt, or exploitation of a child under the age of 18. We're going to read the rest of this here in a second, but I'm going to take a call. Caller, thank you for calling Eagle 104.3 FM. What's your question or comment?
I think that, number one, we live in a country and a nation that it's going down, way down low, and we have the in-between fair presidents we ever had before. And as a referee in soccer or something, you have to be very, very, very important and knowledgeable. Isn't that right?
Well, yeah, you're trained, and you have to know the definitions of the words that you're applying, yes.
Yeah, and that's about it. And so, if you want to add something to this, you can.
Oh, okay, I would. Good statement. I'm going to go with what he said. Thank you, caller. Even that is actually a good analogy in referee. Referees, that's good parenting training. I've got my 14-year-old doing referee. It is extremely good training because you have to step away from the situation. You have to step away from the emotional aspect of it. And when you see a wrong being done, and 90% of the players know what they're doing, they know it's wrong. Sometimes they don't. You can tell by somebody's play whether they really know what they're doing and realize that what they were doing was an error. And you see body language, you watch all kinds of stuff. So you kind of remove yourself from it and make a judgment on what you see. Sometimes you give them a warning, and sometimes you give them a red card and kick them off the field and that player plays down. There's a painful result to correct the behavior because it's intolerable. And you don't give them corporal punishment, but you kick them off the field. And you do, it's a good analogy because you have to take yourself away from the offense. In other words, if somebody makes a foul, was it careless or was it excessive? Like they fouled the person, but they just overdid it, and any rational person would have known better. Or was it serious? In other words, they were just actually very deliberately being violent in their behavior. So those are the kind of things that you have to judge. You have to have experience. You have to remove yourself from it. You have to remember if there's somebody on the field that ticks you off, that you got to stick to your standards, the daily standard, the daily thresholds that would warrant a red card or yellow card or whatever. So every game's a new game. You know, you can't punish the person today for what you saw him do yesterday. You can watch out for the behavior because you know it may be coming. It's the same thing with parenting. There's times in parenting that you have to, especially for correction, you have to step back. That's why it's good to have two parents, isn't it? a mom and a dad. Sometimes mom gets emotional and she calls in for dad. Dad, take this. And sometimes the correction is stuff that the kids don't want. But if dad's cool, calm, and collected, he's rational. He can sometimes be talked out of a particular punishment. But sometimes he is just solid as a rock. And if you don't want more punishment, you better stick with what he gives you. So I'd say that is actually a good analogy. And the thing that you alluded to, caller, is that our country is having the tendency to run amok, where young people do have less respect for their parents. They have a tendency to go to their parents for correction or for advice or for their limits, to find their limits. And what happens is they start finding their limits through experimentation instead of using sound counsel. So the parent says, here's your sound counsel, son. You're 4 years old. This is your sound counsel. Oh, by the way, you do what I say. And you keep doing what I say, in 10 years after doing what I say, you'll see, oh my goodness, dad had sound counsel. But in the short term, because I don't want you to be injured by your own foolishness, if you do contrary to what I tell you, there's going to be a cost. It's going to cost you something. There's going to be, it could be a physical limitation. It could be a time, your time exercise limitation. It could be corporal punishment, depending on your standards. Now, is it legal? Should we kick in everybody's door because they've got an official, paddle? You know, I've seen people with their the little toy they had with a little ball on the rubber band, and they get a sad face on it, and it's sitting over there in the kitchen someplace on the wall, and it's kind of like, you know, their little thing where they tell the kid, listen, hey. If you keep doing what you're doing, we're going to Mr. Sad Face. And that just itself may get the child to say, whoa, we're not going to go there. I'm going to change my behavior. Is that right? Is it wrong? I'm going to actually go to the Bible because it's going to seem very extreme. And we're just going to see what the principles are. In the old days, I could go to Sir William Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England, the commentaries of the common law. And he discussed the rights of the child and the rights of a parent. And I think I'll do that, and then I'll go to the Bible. Yeah, that's what I'm going to do. So old school law said the legal duties of the parents to the children and their power over them. And that's what he discussed. He said it was the duty of parents to provide for the maintenance of their children as a principle of natural law. So we see that in these bureaucratic mechanisms to try to get parents to be held accountable for not taking care of their children. But, you know, it has its origins in the common law and the old school way of just keeping one another accountable. Families keeping each other accountable and neighbors keeping each other accountable. And then ultimately, you should only have the state getting involved when those other mechanisms should be a last resort. What we see today is the state getting involved as a first resort. And sometimes, because under that they have that police power, they'll use, in some cases, when there are some corrupt people actually involved in the bureaucracy who get money on the basis of their caseload, they may use this power of the sword as an excuse to come in. And it's a presumption that if they come in and say you're doing something wrong to your children, there's a presumption in the system that says that they're right, instead of the old school way of having to prove that there's some reason to get involved. So, but Blackstone said that this law to maintain your children, it doesn't come from statutes. He says that it's a law laid on you by nature itself, by our own proper. It's just what we do. We bring these children in the world, and naturally, unless there's something dysfunctional of us or we've been trained into insane behavior, we have a natural tendency to understand and a desire to maintain our children. And it says the municipal laws of any of the well-regulated states have taken care to enforce it, though Providence has done it more effectually than any laws, by implanting in the breast of every parent that natural sopan or insuperable degree of affection, which not even the deformity of person or mind, not even the wickedness, ingratitude, and rebellion of children can totally suppress or extinguish. What we see today, though, is a depraved society where people are murdering their children and doing strange things after the fact. In fact, in the news today, there is a horrific story that's been ongoing for over a year about a Florida mother who killed her child. And it's tragic. It's tragic. So there are cases when somebody is really not conforming to the designed norm. In fact, they may conform to the social norm, but are not conforming to the design norm. Now, I'm going to give you the biblical perspective. It says, now, there was a prophecy. This was actually forecasting the Christian era. So this is pre-Christian era wording toward pointing toward the Christian era. It says, behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and terrible day of the Lord. Now, this is what will happen. And he will turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and strike the earth with a curse. So there's a ramification of divine judgment that may come if the fathers are not turning their hearts to their children and the children are not turning their hearts to their fathers. God is serious about that. But this is neat that he's forecasting the Christian era and in under the realm of again, what are the founders of this nation understood. They did have a Christian biblical worldview and understand generally that everybody understood in nature and in law and by divine edict that fathers were to love their children, and of course children, because of love, would honor their parents. Now here's another thing, and this is coming out of the New Testament. It says, and this was written by the Apostle Paul to the church at Ephesus, and he says, children, obey your parents in the Lord. All he's doing here is he's just kind of quoting the Old Testament. For this is right, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, and you may live long on the earth. Now he's he challenges parents. So if you want to know what the biblical take on this is, on parenting, it says, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. Now we heard the comment from that one dad who said he kept smacking. Everybody in the family was smacking each other, and it just escalated to this mutual smacking, this aggressive household. Well, look what the New Testament says. It says, your fathers do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. So fathers, turn your hearts to your children. Children, your hearts to your father. Don't provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. And then it goes on and it talks about chastening. It says, no chastening or correction seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. And there's an implication that painful is on the Rumpelstiltskin there, okay? Nevertheless, afterward it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. There is a proverb that comes back. This was written, we understand, by Solomon. He who spares his rod hates his son. Now, his rod may not be a six-foot stick that somebody whacks. There are some people that whack their family and their neighbors on the back across the ribs with these big sticks because they show their face or something in Taliban country. That's not what it's talking about. You know, it is talking about a swat on the Rumpelstiltskin with the appropriate thing that's not designed to cause any damage to the body, but merely a short-term reminder of proper behavior. It says here, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. And this sounds kind of harsh to some. It says, do not withhold correction from a child, for if you strike him with the rod, he will not die. And the implication here is not you're going to beat the snot out of them over their back, but maybe their backside. I call it the Rumpelstiltskin. You shall deliver his soul from hell. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the donkey, a rod for the fool's back. The rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. So those are actually proverbs that come out of the Bible. In the Christian era, the forecast and the directive is that the hearts of the fathers should be turned to the children, children to their fathers, and that fathers would not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. And at the same time, that would bring correction and chastening to your children quickly in order to bring a peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Okay, we're going to come back with this issue. I'm going to read from the UN Rights of the Child Convention. We're going to see what it says, see what kind of implication it has on your life. Tune back in.